89.3 4CRB.
And a very good morning to you. John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group back with you for another program of The Law and You here on 4CRB. As always, it's your opportunity to get free legal advice between now and 10 o'clock. That, of course, is 11 o'clock daylight saving time. All we ask you to do is get on that telephone as soon as you possibly can, 55208888. That number again, 55208888. And as we say always, if you're calling from south of the Tweed River, you need to put 07 in front of the number. But otherwise, you can get straight through. Thank you to all the people who called in last week and made for such an interesting program. I think it pretty well equals the record number of calls we've ever received. We ended up with 12 calls, which when you think about the fact that the program is only for half an hour, that's a pretty good call rate. But enough of that. We have someone who's very quick out of the blocks this morning, and we say a very good morning to Anne. G'day, Anne. How are you today?
Hello, John. Thank you for taking my call.
No trouble.
I'm just wanting to know, I live in a high-rise apartment, and I was wanting to just do some very minor renovations, like, for instance, a kitchen bench top. I'm not going into any walls or anything.
Yep.
And the units here, the body corporate, have guidelines for renovations, and they've put a stop on it because they're wanting me to get all these reports and asbestos reports. I'm not going into any walls or anything.
So all you're doing is taking the kitchen top off and putting a new kitchen top on.
That's right.
Yeah, okay.
And it's not a bylaw, it's just guidelines. And I wondered just how binding can they do that? Just stop me from doing it. They won't give approval.
Yes,
in my own unit?
Yes, well, I would have thought that if the works that you're carrying out are completely internal, then they wouldn't be able to do that. What they're probably concerned about is the material that's going to be taken out of your apartment and taken down in the lift. What I would suggest you do is give the Office of the Body Corporate Commissioner a call. Have you got a pen handy?
Yes, I have.
Okay, so their number is 1-800... 060-119. So if you just give them a call and just explain the situation to them, my immediate reaction is that if these are simply guidelines, they probably are not legally enforceable. They're simply guidelines. They're not bylaws. But if you give them a call,
I can understand the guidelines for where there may be asbestos. I know there's asbestos in ceilings and in coating that's on the ceilings. But
well, it may or may not be. It depends. Depends when your unit was built as to whether there'd be any asbestos there at all. So that's one of the first issues that needs to be determined. If it's an older building, then it may be possible that there is asbestos there, but in newer buildings, it'd be highly unlikely that there is. So as I say, I think the only issue would be that they would be concerned about the materials that you're going to put into the lift to take down. But I would have thought the people who are replacing, normally those old kitchen tops.
Yes, it's a proper building company.
Yes. Well, normally those old kitchen tops are simply particle board with Laminex over the top.
That's really all it is. It's a stone. It's a stone bench top.
Oh, well, that's even more so.
But it's a reputable building company we've organised to have it done.
Yes.
But,
well, I think I'd also just mention it to them as well. But I would I would speak to the Body Corporate Commissioner's Office then, Anne.
Okay.
All right.
Look, could I ask you now another quick question?
Sure.
I went to a body corporate committee meeting, and now the minutes have come out, and there's quite a few things in the minutes that were not discussed at the meeting. What do you do about that?
Well, I think you need to notify the chairman in writing that these things, that you were at the meeting, these things were not discussed, and ask them if they can please correct the minutes and provide you with a copy of the minutes. The minutes will have to be approved, normally approved at the next committee meeting. So I would be writing to them immediately and saying, look, I was present at that meeting. This didn't happen. That didn't happen. This was said and is not recorded, et cetera, et cetera. And can you please correct the minutes? Normally the minutes are simply a brief record of what was discussed. It doesn't set down every word that was spoken, but it has to carry the basic understanding of each item that was discussed and how it was resolved. All right, then?
Thank you very much, John.
All the very best. And the time on 4CRB is just coming, just coming up to 22 minutes to 10, 22 minutes to 11 south of the border. And we say a very good morning to Brian. G'day, Brian. How are you?
Hello. Good morning.
Yes, Brian. How are you?
Fine. Thank you, John. Thank you for taking my call.
How can we help?
John, a quick question. My mom passed away about a week ago, and she has no property at all except about $55,000 in the bank. Now, I'm the executor of the will, and I need to divide those monies between the three children mentioned in the will.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do I need probate for that?
Look, you wouldn't need probate, Brian. What that's basically classified is as a small estate. So what I would suggest you do is when your mother's death certificate issues, if you go to the bank with the death certificate and the original of the will and proof of your own identity to show them that you're the executor under the will, and then they will probably put you in touch with their estate administration section. Normally what the banks require where it's a small estate and there's not going to be probate, or the bank is going to agree to waive the requirement for probate, they will require the beneficiaries under the will to sign an indemnity saying to the bank that in consideration of the bank waiving the requirement for probate, the beneficiaries agree to indemnify the bank in the event that it's later found that that wasn't the last will or there's some other issue. All right, but it should be pretty straightforward for you, Brian.
Yeah.
All right,
then. How much do you classify it as small estate?
Well, look, as a rough rule of thumb, and it varies from bank to bank, it's normally around about $50,000. So if the balance is less than $50,000, if the estate looks to be quite uncontroversial, say, for example, your mother has, say, four children. The death certificate discloses four children, and the will says that all four of those children are beneficiaries under the will. Then the bank would probably say, "Well, look, we'll agree to waive the requirement for probate." But if there are, say, five children named on the death certificate, and therefore the bank has a concern that there could potentially be a family provision claim or something of that nature, then the bank may be more circumspect about it. But as a general rule of thumb, it's around that $50,000. If a person has shares in publicly listed companies, and again, a larger shareholding, so you know that can be a little bit less. It can be as little as $10,000 to $20,000, and again, it depends on the share registry. And finally, if a person has paid an accommodation bond to a nursing home, then most nursing homes these days require probate of the will before releasing the bond.
Yeah, that's the problem I'm facing. They require probate of the being of the will. But
who, the nursing
home? Amount of only $9,000.
Sorry, the nursing home require probate.
Yeah, for an amount of $9,000.
Only $9,000. Is that the bond?
Yeah, $9,700.
Right.
Bond. Yeah.
Oh, that's a very very low bond. I've never heard of an accommodation bond that low.
That's the balance bond that is owing to her.
Right, that's the money owing back. Well, what you may need to do there is to negotiate with the nursing home in the circumstances and say, look, the whole estate is only $14,700. You know, it's going to cost in the order of $4,000 to get probate, including all the costs of advertising and goodness knows what. So, can in the circumstances will you agree to waive probate? The death certificate discloses all the children are beneficiaries, and all the children are happy to provide an indemnity to enable the matter to be finalised without probate.
The total amount in the bank is $55,000.
$55,000. I thought you said $5,000.
No, $55,000.
Oh, okay, if it's $55,000, then you very well may find that the bank will require probate. Yes, unfortunately. All right.
And what is the process of probate?
Well, probate is basically the proving of the will in the Supreme Court. Did your mother pass away in Queensland or New South Wales?
Yeah,
Queensland. Okay, so there is a process that needs to be gone through to prove the will. It's an application to the Supreme Court supported by an affidavit by the executor which annexes a copy of the will, a copy of the death certificate. It needs to be advertised before the probate application is made. So,
Can I do it myself? Or?
Look, you possibly can, but the overwhelming majority of people would use a lawyer to do it.
All right.
Okay, then.
Okay, thanks, John.
Okay, Brian, all the very best. And the time on 4CRB is just coming up to 17 minutes to 10. That's 17 minutes to 11, daylight saving. And we say a very good morning to Doug. G'day, Doug. How are you? Hi, Doug.
Hello, John.
Yes, how are you, Doug?
Good, thanks, buddy. Look, just a quick question. A friend of mine lives in a 55... village.
Yep, 55 plus.
55 plus, right? Mm-hmm. Now, he's in a very bad way. He's passing away. He's left his property to a friend. Now, this friend is going to inherit the property.
Mm-hmm.
Does he have to pay death duties on that, just being a friend?
There are no death duties.
There's no death duties?
No, there's no death duties in Australia, either state or federal.
Right.
So, no, there wouldn't be an issue there. No. Do you know whether the property is freehold title or is it a leasehold or what is it?
Yeah, well, he pays a body corp.
Okay, so it sounds to me like it is a freehold title.
He just owns the house. He doesn't own the land.
Oh, right, okay. So it's actually a, what do they call it?
Retirement village.
It's a relocatable home park. So what you do then is your friend, has the fellow left a will?
Well, he left a will, leaving it to him.
Who's the executor under the will?
The bloke that's
going to inherit. So he will need to contact the management of the park, and what normally happens there is that the park will assist in helping him to sell, and he basically sells the home that's on the piece of land, there'll be a new agreement entered into with the new owner.
But if he wants to live it in himself...
Oh, yes, he can do that.
He can do that, no problem at all.
Hmm.
Yeah. Now, what about, John, just one more quick question.
Oh, sorry, as long as he's over 55.
Oh, yes, he is, yes.
Right.
Yeah, he rents a room off me.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, yep. That's how it'll come about. But he also has a son, this person,
mm-hmm.
and the person that's inheriting this place doesn't want the son to be informed of the death of his father.
Mm.
And I think because he's frightened that the son will contest the will.
Mm.
Now, the son lives in Perth,
mm.
and nobody knows just exactly where.
Mm. Well, so, there's no obligation to advertise that someone's passed away, so there's no need to put a funeral notice in the paper. That's entirely optional.
Okay.
It's up to the executor... whether the executor notifies the son or not, but one would think, you know, that there is a very strong moral obligation to do that. Again, it depends on the circumstances. If the fellow, before passing away, has said, "Look, I don't want my son to be notified," well, obviously the executor's got to respect those wishes.
Now, if the
son finds out, within 6 months and notifies an intention to claim, or if the process of transferring the property to the executor has not been completed within 9 months, then the son could possibly bring a claim. But it sounds to me as if the assets in the estate are going to be fairly small.
About $300,000.
Oh, okay, all right. So that's probably worth a crack on the part of the son. The other thing that your friend should do, I think, Doug, is to prepare a fairly detailed statement of testamentary wishes or statutory declaration, which sets out in quite precise terms why he doesn't feel that he has any obligation to make any provision for his son. And it would need to say, look, I've considered the entitlement of my son, given that he is my child. However, for these reasons, you know, I haven't had any contact with him for 30 years. I never received birthday cards, Christmas cards. He wants no contact with me or whatever. Because of when a claim is made, the best person to give evidence is no longer with us. So for that reason, it is extremely important in that situation where you're excluding a beneficiary that you make sure that you have something like that done. And I would strongly recommend that he have that done with a solicitor who specialises in that area of wills and estates.
I'll check with my friend about that, John, but the person is going to be deceased. He's unable to do any of that sort of stuff now because
has he lost capacity?
Yes.
Oh, right, okay. Unfortunately, that's going to be an issue that the person inheriting is going to have to deal with.
Okay, then. Thanks very much for
Your Richard,
help.
All the very
have
best.
Have a good day.
Thank you. You too. And the time on 4CRB, it's just past 12 minutes to 10, 12 minutes to 11, daylight saving time, and we say a very good morning to Richard. G'day, Richard. How are you today?
Very good, thank you.
That's good. How can I help?
Mate, I bought a property with my daughter and her husband 4 years ago. A year after we moved in, we got a letter from the council to say that for the granny flat that we live on, which is separate from their house, the certification fee hadn't been paid and they wanted us to pay them $14,000.
Mm.
We checked with the council and they said, well, yes, it carries over when you buy the property, you take that stuff. We checked with our lawyer who said they accepted responsibility, that I should have spot that in the conveyancing.
Mm.
But over the last 3 years, they've been paying it off in dribs and drabs, and every time we want to get a bit more of that money because we have to pay it to the council, otherwise it goes on our rates.
Mm.
They've been dragging their feet, and it's like pulling a tooth.
This is the lawyer.
Got all the money out.
This is the lawyer.
This is from the lawyer, yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, that's a notifiable negligence claim. The lawyers should have notified their professional indemnity insurers. The reason they probably didn't is because the deductible in these matters is $25,000. So the lawyer, if the amount is only $14,000, the lawyer's probably taken the view that they would rather pay it than notify it as a claim because they're going to have to pay it anyway. So, look, I would simply go back to the lawyers and say, look, you know, this is really unacceptable. How much is now owing?
Oh, there's about $5,000 still owing.
Still owing. I think I would go back to them and just say, look, this is just becoming ridiculous. I want the remainder paid immediately. Or failing that, I'm going to consult a lawyer about the possibility of making a claim for in relation to your negligence so that the balance can be paid out.
Okay, well, that's the best thing to do.
I think so. Okay. Look, you know, I mean, it'd be different if they were paying the amount faithfully and it wasn't taking your time up all the time to follow them up and chase them up and goodness knows what. But I think really, I think it may have got to the point in time where you need to take a slightly firmer hand about it. And I mean, you can still be very nice about it and say, look, you know, I've been patient, you know, over 3 years, but it's becoming increasingly difficult. I've got to ring you to get the money all the time and, you know, you don't pay and then I ring again and I have to ring again, whatever the story is that whatever's actually happening, and say, look, you know, I've really got to the point where enough is enough. So either you pay it by regular installments without me having to call you, or I'll need to consult someone about recovering the balance of the money owing.
Okie doke. And it's like, would they be answerable to any sort of a board if they fail to?
Look, I don't know, to be honest, Richard, given that the amount is within the deductible, I'm just not sure if there's actually an obligation for them to notify. I certainly know that if their failure to notify would probably have voided their insurance on the claim, because you're under an obligation to immediately notify when circumstances arise that may reasonably give rise to a claim. But I think that's more a case that if you fail to do that, you've breached your obligations under the insurance and therefore are probably not covered. But the reality is that if the claim is only $14,000 and it's less than the deductible, well, they're not going to get it from the insurer anyway. Although, that being said, the insurer would have paid out the whole claim immediately and recovered the deductible from, or fairly quickly, and recovered the deductible from the lawyer. And I can guarantee that the insurer, Lexon, would not have hung around for 3 years waiting for the amount to be paid. They would have required it paid back, post haste.
Would they have had to pay the whole deductible or just the $14,000?
No, they'd only have to pay, they'd have to pay a deductible to the extent of the claim plus the legal costs that the insurer incurs in resolving the matter.
Okay.
So they probably would pay more. They probably would have had to have paid about maybe $18,000, something like that, by the time you got the insurer's legal costs out of the road as well.
Okay. Well, look, thanks very much for that advice. I really appreciate it.
Okay, Richard, all the very best with that.
Thanks a lot.
Bye now. And the time is just past 7 minutes to 10. If you have a question or a query, get on that telephone straight away, 55208888. We still have time for one or two calls, but you will need to be very quick to get on the phone. While we're waiting for a call to come through, one thing that I should mention, our firm was asked to present a seminar yesterday morning, a breakfast seminar for business clients of Westpac Bank, and we were speaking about brand security. One of the partners in the firm, Rob French, was speaking about that, and then members of my team were talking about the various issues around powers of attorney relevant to business and some of the myths and pitfalls. But there was also a presenter there, Damien Seaton, from a company called Cyber Audit Team, I think it is, speaking about the introduction of the Privacy Amendment Notifiable Data Breaches Act, which the obligations under which commence from Thursday of this week. Now, this legislation was passed in February last year from memory. But it's amazing how many people just don't appreciate how potentially dangerous this can be to a business. Most people seem to be under the impression that if you have that unless the turnover of your business is more than $3 million, that it doesn't apply. But that's actually not correct. And so the legislation applies to organisations, whether they be profit companies for profit or organisations for profit or not for profits, with a turnover of more than $3 million. But also, even if the turnover is less than $3 million, if the business or the organisation handles sensitive information like client details, credit information, so credit card details or tax file numbers, then you come within the ambit of this legislation. So what that means is that as from the 22nd of February, which is Thursday of this week, if you are hacked, if your computer system is hacked, and people get access to confidential information of that nature, you are under an obligation to report that breach to the Australian Information Commissioner within 30 days of becoming aware of the breach, and you're also under an obligation to notify members of the public if their data has been compromised. So, for example, if your client base in your data system was breached, you have an obligation to notify all of the people that you do business with that your data has been breached. And the maximum penalties for failing to comply is $360,000 for an individual and $1.8 million for an organisation. So as you can see, it's very, very serious and can have enormous implications. And the incidence of emails arriving these days, which are phishing, and that's phishing, not fishing, and looking for data, are really quite quite significant. They seem to arrive with regular monotony, and a staff member unwittingly opening an email could potentially infect your whole system. So make sure you beware. But we do have one last call that we may be able to take. We'll say a very good morning to Rose. G'day, Rose. How are you?
Hi, John. I just want to ask, I've been left, are you there?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I've been left 25% in a will 18 mm-hmm. months ago,
mm-hmm.
and the rest of the, there was another five people left to share,
mm-hmm.
and not one of them have sent back their, you know, identification.
Right.
Is there anything that can be done to, it's well, that, a public trustee one,
mm-hmm. But that shouldn't stop the distribution to you if you've complied with your requirements.
Well, that's what I thought. Mm. That's what I thought.
Mm. So have you spoken to the public trustee's office about that?
I have. I have.
And what are they saying?
Just that, you know, oh, well, when it's a family matter like this, we often get problems with it.
But I don't see what the problem is. Is it a Queensland estate?
Yes.
So the time for a claim has passed. You know, someone would have had to have notified and commenced proceedings within 9 months of date
it's
of
all
death.
Yeah.
You're at double
it's
that.
It's all gone to the Supreme Court and
yes.
everything.
Yes.
It's all passed.
Yes. So, look, I would be getting on to the public trustee's office and saying, look, you know, there's no reason why the distribution should be delayed just because these other beneficiaries are being dilatory. Your share of the estate is clear. You're to receive 25%, and you know, as far as you're concerned, you want that money paid out. And if there's any reason why they say they are not going to distribute, whereabouts do you live, Rose? Which part of the coast?
Well, I'm in Southport area.
Okay, all right.
This is up in Townsville.
No, that's okay. I was just thinking that if you wanted to, it's not possible to go into chapter and verse of this sort of thing on this show, but if you wanted to ring the Citizens Advice Bureau in Southport, have you got a pen handy?
I have.
5532961.
5532961. 96, yeah.
And you might be able to make an appointment and go and see them there in Railway Street. But we'll have to leave it right there, Rose, because unfortunately
right.
we're just pressing up to the news. So thanks
Thank
for your
you,
call
John.
And
Thank
good luck
you.
With that. Bob is online. Bob, if you can just wait there, I'll take that call when we get off air. This is John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group. It's been great to be with you this morning for another program of The Law and You. Thank you to all those people who've rung in and made it such an interesting program. I'll look forward to being back with you again next week. But as always, until then, goodbye and God bless.